Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. This podcast is for you if you have an insane drive to find the truth of things. It's not the good answers that we seek, but the good questions. I interview a range of different guests from many different fields, all with the intention to uncover the simple truths that are hidden in plain sight. Most people don't want to go there. I go there. My guests go there, and you benefit. Please let me know if you enjoy these episodes, and as always, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the podcast. Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. My guest today is Fabian Scheinholz, and he is a senior technology and operations executive bringing over 20 years of domestic and global experience. Today, I'll interview him about synthetic data, which he's been in this field for a really long time. I'm really interested in synthetic data, particularly as it relates to training LLMs. So I reached out to my network, and Fabian responded on LinkedIn. So thank you so much for being open to this interview.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Yeah. So for my listeners and even for myself, because I still don't even quite know what synthetic data is. What is synthetic data?
So synthetic data is data that behaves like real data, but has no relation with real data. So think about, you know, any data that describes you, right? Your name, you know, first name, last name, social security number, or you know, in Argentina, the national ID number, you know, anything that describes you, right? So that is data that is related to you. So imagine data that has the same functions, but it hides who you are because it's not representative of a single particular individual. Mm. And you can do the same thing with products, for example, right? So say that you have a fountain pen, right? So you can call it something different, but you describe the behaviors in the data, such as a fountain pen.
Very interesting. And so synthetic data, so is it like somebody just is creating data around fictional people, or does it actually tie it to a real person?
No, it doesn't tie it to any real person, right? And so there are some challenges with synthetic data, and exactly what you just mentioned, right? It's like, so if you're not tying it to a particular person, how real is that data? Mm-hmm. And there is no straight answer, unfortunately, right? In theory, the data should be very real, right? But part of the challenge with synthetic data is how you generate it. And especially when it comes to training models, right? Whether it is LLMs or churn models or conversion models, one of the challenges has to do with the behaviors that your data exhibit, mm-hmm. right? So again, I'm gonna use humans because it's probably the easier way to understand that. So you exhibit certain behaviors. You know, you wake up in the morning, you have a cup of coffee, go to the bathroom, take a shower, get dressed, you know, so on and so forth. Those are behaviors that are, you know, big block behaviors. You know, a lot of people exhibit the same behaviors. There's nothing very particular about those behaviors, right? But they're behaviors nonetheless. The question is what happens in between these big blocks of behavior, right? You know, from the time you wake up to the time you go to the kitchen and make your cup of coffee, what happens, right? So that is called nuanced behaviors. And synthetic data can generate, you know, with methodologies, you can generate synthetic data that addresses the big block behaviors. But the question is the nuanced behavior modelable? You know, you can synthesize it or not. Let's say that you cannot, right? For the sake of this discussion. If you cannot, then how do the models that you're using that data to train, you know, what are the results, right? So say in a churn model, right, where you are predicting who is going to churn from an e-commerce site or from a video game, is the nuanced behavior important, right? If you click on the right button versus the left button in your controller. You know, if you go to the left, you go to the right, whether you click it too fast or too slow, you know, those nuanced behaviors, are those nuanced behaviors important to training a churn model, right? And there are arguments in favor and against that. My position is that we don't know, right? We don't know yes, we don't know no. And we should really spend more time thinking about it, because if you're trying to build a model that produces viable results, you really need to take into consideration a lot of the elements that go into building that model and training the model in particular.
Very interesting. And so when you're saying training a model, are you specifically referring to LLMs or maybe even other machine learning algorithms, or has synthetic data had a large use case inside of the businesses before LLMs came about?
It has had a big impact before LLMs have. And when I talk about models, I'm talking about models in general, LLMs and other machine learning models.
Really interesting. Okay, so what were the use cases before LLMs? And I'm definitely very interested in getting into the LLMs, but I want to understand what was the last 20 years of synthetic data been like?
It's been mostly about churn models, conversion models, predictive lifetime value models, product optimizations, marketing optimizations. Think about multi-arm bandit algorithms. You know, and you know, resource allocation, you know, different resources, you know, again, from humans to marketing channels to spend, you know, they exhibit behaviors, right? And the nuanced behaviors may or may not be important. We still don't know, right? And with LLMs, you know, think about, you know, training an LLM model. You know, I think that, again, let's assume that the previous models before LLMs, nuanced behavior wasn't important. Just again, let's make that assumption. I'm not saying that it wasn't. I'm just, you know, let's make the assumption. But with LLMs, I think that the nuanced behavior is going to be definitely important, because you're trying to not just, you know, it's not just chatbots, right? You know, who cares? You know, chatbots, you know, you can, hey, Alan Turing, right? Generated that chatbot before, you know, right after the Second World War. So a chatbot is not, it's a good use case for an LLM, but it's not an interesting case, right? You know, it's you know, I put it akin to okay, you know, you want to put a man on the moon, great, that's super cool, but we've done it before a few times. You know, let's put a man in Mars. Yeah. Yeah, that's more interesting, right? Yeah. So again, a chatbot is cool, but you know, there are more interesting use cases in for LLMs. But with LLMs, you really are looking at behaviors, right? So my opinion, and again, it's an opinion, I don't have a way of fully proving it yet, is that nuanced behaviors in LLMs are of paramount importance, because you're looking at not just what clusters of individuals are doing, but you're looking at what individuals are doing.
And so, okay, so when you say chatbot, are you, well, no, so I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff that we could go down. The LLMs in particular, like what are the most interesting use cases, but for LLMs outside of chatbots, but specifically, I want to understand your points about nuanced behavior and chatbots. Specifically, what are you talking about, like, trying to understand what the user is doing as they're interacting with this chatbot?
No, what I'm saying is the chatbot is an interesting use case, right? But who cares, really?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, somebody answering a question, you know, using a chatbot for customer support, is cool, right? And actually, that may be a good use case for nuanced behavior. I need to think about that. But the way I'm thinking about a chatbot for customer support or customer service is really more about a knowledge base, right? It's a decision tree, right?
Got it.
And
yeah, yeah.
What
okay.
you are doing is you're understanding natural language processing, or natural language, right? With natural language processing, and you are going to the left, to the right, or center based on a decision tree, you know, an algorithm that is based on decision trees. Now, let's use LLMs for that, right? Again, you have the same elements, but if you're trying to predict what somebody is going to require help with, then the nuanced behavior is important, in my mind, is important to understanding those future behaviors.
Okay, got it. And this is interesting because I was just reading about natural language processing. Until LLMs came out, the natural language processing was really difficult because language is so nuanced. And then we developed these LLMs, which are essentially the paper in 2018 with the attention transformers kind of made it the ability to focus down on the relevant parts of the sentences, and they were able to get nuance. Is that part of why you're saying that nuanced behavior or nuanced data is interesting?
That's one of the things, right? Because so what you are mentioning, you know, that paper, what it's looking is looking contextually, but the context is small, right? You know, the window of context is like this big, right?
Yeah.
And so you're looking in that context at the behavior, and it's a window that moves. The way I look at nuanced behavior is a bigger window, right? Again, using the example of you wake up, go to the kitchen, and make a cup of coffee. What happens in between? How many steps do you take? You know, do you always take the same steps? Do you always wake up on the same side of the bed? Do you always turn the light at the, you know, I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. And while it is an extreme example, it does exemplify what I'm talking about when I'm talking about nuanced behaviors.
Got it. Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, we could almost go philosophically, and because every time that you make any movement in the earth, it's not only attached to that single moment in the earth, but it's also attached to every previous moment that you've ever existed, that anybody else has existed, and then the universe, everything is happening within this one space of the universe. So it's all
quantum entanglements. let's not go down that way. The butterfly effect, I think that bringing it a little bit more down to earth, yes, there's a little bit that has to do with that, right? So for example, I'll talk about me. I have had for the last 15 years the same breakfast. It's oatmeal with nuts and a couple of other things, cinnamon, you know. And every morning I have the same breakfast. And I have deviated a few times, but not mostly because it wasn't available, because I was traveling or whatever the case happened to be. So that is also nuanced behavior.
The fact that it's the same thing over and over and over again. Yes.
It's the same thing over and over again. So now the question is, given certain situations, how would you deviate from that behavior? If you can predict that, right? You know.
Got it. Yep. Got it.
Right. So that is where it becomes interesting with nuanced behaviors, is where you can predict, given the environment and given the behaviors, how are these prediction is going to change.
Okay, that's super interesting. Okay, so we got nuanced behavior. Before we go, because what I really want to talk about is synthetic data, because I've just been working at a company for the last year doing AI training, and I've learned a lot about AI training, and I think it surprised a lot of the researchers who came up with that transformer architecture and all the other people working in this field. I think it surprised them a lot of how much human input was necessary in order to train these models. And I got a very close look at what it takes to actually train those with those human beings, how intensive it is, how expensive it is, and how crazy it is. And so, I've been hearing in the background, but what about synthetic data? Synthetic data is coming. Are you bullish? Are you bearish? Do you think that synthetic data is going to take over RLHF or SFT, I think supervised fine tuning or reinforcement learning through human feedback? Are those algorithms sort of threatened by synthetic data?
Ah, I think that synthetic data is awesome. I think that a lot of algorithms, you will be able to use synthetic data to train. And there are going to be some algorithms where synthetic data is going to get you to a certain level, and then you're going to have to
Yeah,
finish
got it.
it the rest of the time, right? To me, the biggest problem that synthetic data solves and has always solved is how do you get an algorithm to production fastest? Because the problem that you have with training any AI model, whether it's machine learning or a proper AI model or whatever the case happens to be, is data density, right? And when you first start, say for example, when you first launch a game, right? You're not going to have an algorithm that produces viable results on day one because you don't have the amount of data and the density of data that you need to train. Not only that, it takes a while to train. So how do you have, say, a churn model that is in place on day one so you can immediately start doing retention? Right? So the only way that you do it is with synthetic data. And I have tried it with the beta launches, right? Collecting all of the beta, still doesn't work, right? Or still you don't have enough data to train the algorithm properly. You can get to say, 60%, but 60% is not good enough, right? It needs to be 75% or better in order to provide viable results. So the way I normally handle that problem is, and obviously over time I learned to do it better, was to get the beta data, right? Then duplicate it multiple times, make multiple copies, and then have an algorithm or a subroutine that would clean up the data and deduplicate, right? Because you don't want duplicated data, right? And obviously you're going to have certain amount of data that will be packaged for one player versus another player, So instead of, having, say, five players, now you have 20,000 players, right? It was all synthetic data based on five players, right? So that was early days of synthetic data was based on that. Now you can start generating synthetic data just by understanding what the algorithm needs as inputs, right? But you always start from some real case, right? So if you have an algorithm that is trying to track human behavior, then you basically try to get some segment of data that is representative of that. And then you study that, and then you produce data that is synthetic based on that. You don't necessarily use that base data, but you use it as a way to model the data. And again, the nuanced behavior becomes the sticking point. Is the nuanced behavior carrying through, or is the nuanced behavior being flattened out? So I think in terms of the difference between finance modeling and experimental data science, right? So you cannot use experimental data science for finance modeling. It's super dangerous, right? Because what finance does is it gets rid of all of the behaviors, flattened out, and it's basically looking at the behavior of the numbers over time, right? As opposed to data science that is looking at the behavior of systems over time, right? And if you are doing, say, for example, predictive lifetime value, should be an input to the finance models, but cannot be, the finance models cannot be based on predictive lifetime value. Because you're not looking at, when you're looking at predictive lifetime value, you're looking at, in the best possible case, 6 months, right? 180 days. If you look beyond that, you're going to get in trouble because the market changes. But from a finance point of view, finance model point of view, it's not that the market is irrelevant, it's very relevant, but they're looking at the market overall, right? And those small changes do not affect the model. So they can do a 5-year forecast. I mean, it's always wrong, right? But the degrees of how wrong it is, somebody that knows how to do it, the degree is not very, it's not very wrong. It's still wrong, but maybe wrong by 20%,
Yeah,
which in
interesting.
finance is nothing.
Okay.
On
So,
5 years, right? On a 5 year forecast.
And so it's really interesting because it kind of goes back to that tangent we could have gone on, the philosophical question of just like everything depends on the scope of the question that you're asking, particularly in data. But I guess what LLMs are going to do is they're going to allow us, assuming that your nuanced behavior theory is right, is that they're going to allow us to understand a lot more of that. And the scope of the problems that we're trying to go after will just widen and widen and widen. Do you agree with that? Do you think that the scope will just continue to increase? Are you thinking that this LLM or whatever comes after the LLM is going to be able to predict the future?
I'm totally bullish about that.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean the point that if you want to go philosophical, is AI general AI, right? Talking about AI as a set of tools, is AI going to replace human creativity or humans? To me, the answer is absolutely not. Right, humans will not be replaced, not because there is anything special about humans, right? It's because there are certain chemical reactions that happen within humans that we still don't understand what those are, right? In order to reproduce them, will we eventually understand them? Yes. It doesn't mean that we will be able to emulate them to the degree that humans will be replaced.
This goes back
But
to
I think of AI and general AI, I think of them as tools, right? I mean, fantastic tools. Those tools are going to make our lives better. They're going to enable us to actually finally, maybe as a species, grow. Again, that's the philosophical aspect of it.
So going back to that synthetic data and the will synthetic data replace things like RLHF or SFT, and whether you think that that's accurate. And so from your explanation that you gave earlier, I get the sense that like when you're saying that there's five humans with real data, and then you use the synthetic data to then extrapolate that and create 10,000 humans of simulated humans, it seems like it's going to be a helper to these things, and that it isn't going to be a replacement, but it'll just like fit in where it fits in, and then it'll just go into this long complex chain of okay, first you give the synthetic data, then you get the RLHF, then you get the and so it'll just kind of expand outwards and it'll fill in all the holes. Is that accurate?
That's pretty happening, yes.
Anything else that we should know about that sort of the future of AI training in terms of synthetic data?
I think that the better we get at understanding behaviors, the better the synthetic data is going to be, right? And again, I think that the bigger question that we need to answer with synthetic data is about those nuanced behaviors. Are the nuanced behaviors important or not? Again, my hypothesis is that nuanced behavior is important, but it's a hypothesis, right? We've seen churn models where when you start to use real data, retrain them, you train them initially with synthetic data, the technique that I explained earlier. And then we retrain them with real data as the game or the e-commerce or whatever it is, that we were studying progress and collected data. And we had the data density, the performance of those models became significantly better. While you're still extracting, a finite set of attributes from the transactions, right? And transaction is not just purchasing something, but also navigating a website or navigating a game. You're always expecting the same thing. It's not that the synthetic data is going to have more or less fields than the data that you're collecting in
Yeah,
reality,
interesting.
right? But there is the thing that is like, okay, synthetic data is flat, right? You produced it, but somebody that generated it, while it may have a one-to-one correspondence with a synthetic record, there is that nuanced thing that is not explicit in the data, but it still translates into the training of the model. And again, it is borderline philosophical, but experimentally, what I have seen is that models, once they get retrained, for example, a churn model, you retrain it once a week, right? So you have the initial model on day one that is used, you train it with synthetic data, produces viable results, but then on week one, when you retrain it with the data that you collected, for week two, the results are better.
Yeah.
And for week three, the results are still better. And week four, better yet. And at some point, depending on the quality of your data and the quality of your model, you can get to, 90% accuracy in your churn predictions or your conversion predictions or your predictive lifetime value or your product optimization or marketing, so on and so forth, right? So there is no way to prove it yet, but again, experimentally or anecdotally, I have seen it develop in that way.
Okay.
And I'm totally in favor of synthetic data. Don't get me wrong, right? I mean, I think that, we should invest a lot more in synthetic data, especially because a lot of these models become biased, right?
Yeah.
So for example, in gaming, although it's no longer the case, but well, it's not the case, but in gaming, we think of gamers to be mostly males, right? It's not true. Actually, we have a very cross section of genders and ages, all sorts of things, right? But when we think about targeting gamers for particular games, we are targeting, 16 to 35 males. So that also thinking creates some bias. So think in terms of when you train a model, if you have that bias, then your model is not going to perform. So what synthetic data enables you to do is to either, flatten out those elements that are biased or balance the data set with the right data in order to create models that are not biased.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because the bias is definitely something that's really interesting, that particularly for the LLMs, because of this importance of RLHF, reinforcement learning through human feedback. And the reason why this algorithm got so popular is that the base LLMs kind of just hallucinate a lot and lie to you and make fun of you and do all these crazy things. And so they realized that they needed a huge horde of human beings in order to train these things how to be polite and like you would like a teenager. And but then the funny thing is that most of the people training these datas are in the same socioeconomic class no matter where you go in the world. And so they're all paying attention to the same media sources and they're they get hired in a certain way. And so it's all creating this bias. And then you have the added bias of us, of a corporation who's interested in profit goals, who's stuck inside of this regulation thing that requires it to be, set to a certain standards, which may or may not be right. But it's all leading to this point where history is getting rewritten right now, and it's getting rewritten. Whoever trains the LLM is rewriting history, basically, because it's already to the point where I ask this more than I ask Google. And Google had the same transition before, where you would, instead of going to Google, you'd go to the library and stuff. So that's happening, and that bias is really interesting. We can talk more about that, or we can, if you have anything to say about that, or we can go into more details of how synthetic data basically gets produced, and what are the tools that you use to produce synthetic data? Like, what's the pipeline for actually creating synthetic data?
Yeah, so I'm going to say something about the bias, and then we can move on to the how-to part. I'm not surprised about the bias, because at the end of the day, it's humans that are producing these models.
Yep.
There is an echo chamber going on, right? You know, if you're on the left, there is an echo chamber which pushes you more to the left. If you're on the right, there is an echo chamber that pushes you more to the right. So those elements of society, fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not going to put a judgment on it, are moving onto AI and the bias in the training sets as well. At some point, like everything, there is going to be a reconciliation of that. And I think that, you know, my hope, and hope is not a strategy, is that the models, the reconciliation with the models will happen. And as a result, you know, we are going to see some changes in society pertaining to echo chambers, or at least opening up the echo chambers rather than being closer and closer the way we are going right now. So that's my position with that. Again, I see a lot of these as tools, right? As tools for society, as tools to, you know, for businesses, you know. And part of the challenges that I see in business is that they think that being biased is a good thing, right? Because obviously they're there to win, right? You know, so if you're biased in favor of your product, you will sell more of your product. You know, makes total sense. I have a different approach to it. I think that the less biased you are, you know, that also means that you are forced to bring more value to your customers, right? Whether it is business to business or business to consumers. So your game should be about the value chain and bringing more value to those that purchase your products, right? And the less biased you are, the more forced you are to bring value, the more you will sell, right? And again, before this call, I had a discussion with somebody, and we were talking about the value exchange, right? You know, so if I provide services to you and these services are value, you should pay for it, right?
Yep.
And there should be a fair exchange, right? So the more value I bring, the more you're going to pay, right? But also think about retention, right? So the more value I bring, the more you're going to want to buy from me.
Yeah, interesting.
Right? And again, the bias models, I think that they mistake that equation quite a bit. They think that by being biased, or, you know, the recommendation is biased, then you're going to sell more units. I think that you will sell more units maybe in the short term, but your retention will suffer over time.
Yeah, it goes back again to the scope of the question. You know, if you is the shareholders and sort of capitalism. I'm a capitalist myself, but at the same time, that if you only think of it on the short term, then and the short term and the long term are generally in conflict with each other, and can be in conflict with each other, and so yeah, there's always that question as well. But let's go back to that how do you actually produce synthetic data?
So now there are a bunch of different companies that produce synthetic data where you basically tell them what you need and they will produce it for you. There is, I was just at CES and I talked to a bunch of them and I forgot the names of the company. One is in Switzerland. The other one is in Italy, in Torino. And there was another company in Seattle. I totally forgot the names.
And so there's no like open source way to produce synthetic data. You actually have to go and to a company and consult with a company in order to produce synthetic data.
Yeah, not that I know, but you know, I never use those companies when I produce synthetic data.
Okay.
So the way I have traditionally produced synthetic data was more about studying the five customers, right? Or the five products or whatever, and then, you know, duplicating, you know, basically coming up with with multiple copies, and then cleaning up the data, making sure that the clusters were not duplicated. It's interesting, is when you do that type of work, you start understanding about some of the challenges with synthetic data, right? Some of the biases is like, well, how come the model is not producing the results that you expected, right? Well, because the data is crap, right? Well, why is the data crap? It's because, we didn't do a good job cleaning. Oh, how do we do a good job cleaning? And so it goes. I think that probably, well, again, I think that a lot of these companies provide a lot of value, because now you don't have to do that work. They've done the work themselves,
yeah.
And they can produce, tons of synthetic data that makes sense. And you can say, look, I want all males, or I want all females, or I want, a good mix, or I want data from this age group, or I want data for these type of products, right? You don't have to say, I want the pimple cleaner, I want skincare products, right? And they can give you tons of data on products that are representative of skincare products, right? So you can do that. So say, for example, that you're doing a supply chain model, right, where you're trying to predict demand and then, buy the chemicals to produce the products based on the demand that you're going to have, right? So how do you train a model to do that? Unless you have tons of data that you already collected, which normally is not the case, because companies are still using data warehouses rather than data lakes, right? So that is another rabbit hole when you're talking about synthetic data, the difference between data warehouses versus
what is the difference? I've heard of both of those terms, but I still don't know the difference between data warehouses and data lakes.
So a data warehouse is a concept that started many years ago, where you are collecting data in a structured database.
Got it.
But it forces you to make some decisions upfront of what data to collect. Right.
So say, yeah.
Right. Now with a data lake, the data lake has two layers. One layer is the raw data, and the other one is the cleansed data. With the raw data, you just collect everything. You don't have to make any decisions in terms of what you're collecting. So say, for example, first name, last name, username, email address, and a couple of other things about you. Right, but there is some more data than that. So with a data warehouse, you will have basically created a table where you only collect those fields. With a data lake, whatever you are collecting, even after that, goes into the raw data layer. And then, if you only need to extract your first name and last name, then you extract it. But now you're collecting all of the data. Now with a data warehouse, if you need to collect more, then you need to go and open up, do heart surgery, expand. You're going to have to test. The development is going to take months. The testing is going to take months. The risk of, introducing bugs into systems that are dependent on the data warehouse is high. With a data lake, all of that goes away, right? Because you're only extracting what you need, and you are not dependent. Systems are not dependent on the cleanse layer, and they're only dependent on a piece of the cleanse layer, right? Mm-hmm. So you have more freedom. So that's the main difference between data lakes and data warehouses.
So we know that synthetic data is going to play a role inside of AI training, but then how will the AI then roll back into the business of synthetic data, or maybe just even make your life easier by helping you to complete various tasks related to synthetic data? Is there going to be any sort of like a blowback back into a virtuous cycle of making your job easier from AI? Are you using AI in your work already?
I'm using AI in my work already, not to produce synthetic data, but yes, I think that the better you understand the production of synthetic data, and the better you can create models that produce that data, you know, look, it's like everything, right? The more data you get, the better the results are. And if the data is viable, right, over time, it's going to become even more viable, and the results are going to be more viable, which if you are using a model to create synthetic data, then you basically have this vicious cycle, right? I mean, you have this feedback mechanism that is going to produce better results. But like with every model, you need to watch out because you are going to have deviations, right? You're going to have, you know, it's going to go to the left or the right or stay center, right? And if it goes to the left or to the right, you want to understand why, right? So for example, again, churn models, right? We had churn models that that perform at 92% accuracy, 93% accuracy, and they produce those results for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden it went down to 85%.
Oh.
Okay, so why, right? So and so you need to watch out for the R-square, right? You know, which is the accuracy of the model. And so if it went from 92, 93% to 85%, while 85% is still super, super cool, right? You know, great, great results. Well, what happened?
Interesting.
Right? So you need to understand what happened. In some cases, nothing happened. That is just what happened. And then 2 weeks later, you're back at, you know, the 90th percentile. In some cases, you actually started, you know, your model needs to not only get fully retrained, but, you know, there is a problem with how the model performs over time and may not account for changes in behavior, nuance or not.
Interesting. Okay, so there's a lot of questions that we can go from here. One, I would like to clarify. So you're saying a churn model will be 92% accurate based on what? Based on the early movements that they make once you get to the website? Is that what you're tracking?
Yeah.
Okay.
So again, with synthetic data, you get it to something viable where you can have it on day one.
Yeah.
But then, you know, once you have it in production and you have a live system, you know, you need to use, again, in my mind, you know, some people might argue that you need to use real data to retrain it.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Okay, interesting.
To me, the use of synthetic data is to get it to day one, right? How do you get it? How do you get a viable model to day one? And once, you know, day one happens and you have it in production, you have the system that is procuring the data for you in production, then what's the point of using synthetic data? I mean, you can use synthetic data to retrain another, a different model, right? And then have it run side by side to see how it performs. You know, that would be a nice experiment.
Oh.
But what's the point, right? So again, on an LLM, right? In my opinion, you need to do a bigger window, but even in the current way the LLMs work, so you get it trained to day one. Once you launch it, you have real humans or real systems interacting with it, and then you use that data to retrain it.
Okay, so one of the things when I first started hearing about synthetic data, I had the same image in my mind that a lot of people had when they first heard about AI, and they're like, okay, AI is going to start to just fill the internet with copy that's written by robots that is just kind of junk. And then I also thought the same thing would happen with synthetic data, that there's just going to be, they're going to try to lower their price, lower their costs of doing business. And they're going to just train these LLMs on synthetic data. And then somehow that they're going to not notice that it's all just going to turn into just a giant shit show, excuse my language, but basically that it's just going to be crap. I'm getting a much more nuanced understanding from you. But what do you think about the threat of that, of like synthetic data being used by larger companies to do these things that actually degrade the quality of the large language models?
Well, I only have a philosophical answer to that question.
Mm.
Unfortunately, we are humans.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, humans not only take the right path, right? In many cases, they decide that they want to take the easier path. And the easier path, in some cases, it's the right path, in some cases, it's not the right path. But the easiest path, may not lead to what you want, right? The way I do it when I train models, when I have my employees train models, or companies that I consult with, train models, is let's have synthetic data or some proxy data, right? I think that, synthetic data is a nice term, but I like to use proxy data. I think that is a more accurate term, right? But the synthetic data, then it doesn't matter how you slice it and dice it. It's like, we want to come up with these super names that are, marketing driven names. The reality is that, this is proxy data. So you use the proxy data to get to day one, right? Once you're on day one, then sure, you can still use proxy data, to fill in, the blanks, so to speak, right? But you're going to really need to use real data to train the models moving forward. Now, LLMs may be a different story because they take a long time to retrain, right? So a churn model, doesn't matter how much data you have, it will not take you more than 24 hours to train, right? I mean, if it takes you more than 2 hours, then your model is really terrible, right? You need to go rewrite it and make it optimal. And this is, I'm talking with petabytes of data, right? 2 hours is plenty of time. So you can run it once a week, right, to produce results that are viable for the next 2 weeks, right? The same thing with predictive lifetime value or conversion models or product optimization or marketing optimization, multi-unbounded algorithms. You can even, run them every day, right? But with LLMs, it's much different, but you should be able to retrain them once a month or once every couple of months, right? Now, your retraining will basically take 2 months to do or a month to do, again, depending on the LLM and depending on the scope of the problem that you're trying to solve with the model. But so you start your run today, in a month or 2 months finishes the retrain, you put it in production, you're collecting data, wash and wear. Now, where, again, in the scenario of retraining, synthetic data does play an interesting role is when you're trying to eradicate the bias in the results,
Oh,
right?
interesting.
But then what you do is you retrain the model with both real data and synthetic data.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so we got a few minutes left. I would like to go into that question of how are you using AI to make your life or make your job easier or your life easier? How are you using AI if it's not with synthetic data? How do you use AI to kind of what's your main use cases that you're using it for?
So for my personal use, since I'm writing a lot of articles, I normally start with something that say ChatGPT or Bard or some other anthropomorphic produces, and then I sort of get ideas from it and I inject my things, but then I rewrite the whole thing and then I use it for grammar. English is my fifth language, so sometimes my grammar falls apart, especially if I'm a little stressed, I mean, and actually English is the last language I learned, and I learned it as an adult rather than as a child, so I still
Whoa.
have some challenges.
Wait, can we? I would like to go into that. How did English become your fifth language, and what were the other languages, and then how did it end up that you learned English as an adult after learning four other languages?
So I grew up in Argentina. And I moved to the States when I was 18 to come to school. And so my first language was actually Yiddish, because at home we spoke Yiddish.
Oh,
And then my father sent me to a public school to learn Spanish, then Hebrew, and then French.
wow. Oh, interesting. Cool.
Right. And then at 18, my mom always wanted me to learn English, and I refused to learn English because I thought that was an ugly language. If I was going to learn an ugly language, I'd rather learn German. But my mom always wanted me to learn English, so she sent me to the States to study English, and I just stayed.
That's cool.
And I was 18 years old, and yeah, but it's not fair because I have a facility to learn languages. Like there is no tomorrow. So I spent a week in Germany for work a few years ago, and at the end of the week, I was speaking German.
Cool.
Now, I studied from Yiddish, but still, right? I was able to not just order a beer, but flirt with girls and have interesting discussions and stuff like that.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. How can people find out more about you if they're interested in learning more about synthetic data or hiring you to do synthetic data for them? How can people find out more about you?
My LinkedIn profile, which Fabian Shane holds, they can find out from there and reach out through LinkedIn or my email address, which is Fabian@fessexconsulting.com, FESSEX consulting.com. And also that's a website that exemplifies the type of services that I can provide.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Stuart Alsop III. Also, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or iTunes for every weekly episode that I publish on Monday mornings. Hope you have a great day.